This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry. It's a live recording of a Christmas party which took place at the home of William Mara, Ph.D., professor at Fordham University, and a whole bunch of other credentials. I would simply point out to you that, like anything which takes place live, there is sometimes an imprecision in language which is not meant to be heresy. So therefore, please take into account that an occasional slip of the tongue may not express with the precision that a theologian does in a dogmatic document when speaking about the church. With this in mind, I hope that you appreciate and enjoy the tape. Thank you.
Can now be the full-time, you could say, an apostle of religion. He's quite a bit of controversy, but it's been maybe for a little while, religion can be the theme, and we can ask questions, have conversation. If you don't feel like doing that, you can go downstairs and play the piano. So, Ben, I'll let you start it off here.
Let me make the introduction, and the reason I suggested this was, obviously, all of us are here for one reason, that's because Bill invited us. The reason that we all accepted is because we like his company, we like his presence, we like his conversation. However, there's one of him, there's 50 or 60 of us. That means a guarantee almost everybody on the way home is going to be saying the same thing. I had a good time, but I didn't have enough time to spend with Bill. Now, when you are a teacher, you can do one of two things. You can either tutor, which is one-on-one, which is beautiful, or you can teach a class, in which case sometimes the questions asked by one student help the entire class, but also by the same token, the entire class gets to listen. When Bill's over in the corner of the kitchen, I can't hear him. If he talks to me, you can't. So I made this suggestion because I thought, number one of the reasons we came here was to talk to him. Number two, he has an obligation to us in a real sense of a word. He's not giving us anything material for Christmas, so he can give us himself. Number three, I thought it might be an interesting approach. I thought it might help, because by the same token, just the little overhearing I could do of most of the conversations, it appears that most people have somewhat the same orientation here. And I know, of course, and I think this might be a gift to Bill, he is a great advocate of intelligent, recreational, but purposeful conversation, which intelligent human beings can enjoy. Now, most of you are intelligent. I disqualify myself. But I believe we can enjoy it. And if I'll just throw this out as a tentative approach, what I would simply say is, let's ask him questions, and let's play off of that. And if anything, I would like to, if I can, be somewhat of a moderator, just to say, hey, listen, you know, I'll repeat the question if someone from that part of the room can't hear. Okay, and also try to keep the children away from the microphones. Okay, so let me start. Oh, you got a comment?
I thought you were going to run this. I'm very glad
that I'll clear the house out if I say anything.
Okay, good.
And of course, she's perfectly
well, listen,
right.
Father Peter
did not come here to hear me talk. They came here to share your
Well, listen,
presents,
it's Father Peter
and
around.
And you're not giving us gifts, so we'll get the other kind of presents. Okay.
Let
me ask you. Go ahead.
Father Peter,
you got a question to lead off?
Well, listen, why don't
I got a question.
My
question to lead off is this. You, Bill Mara, fit a not unique but a distinctive category in America today. You're an honest-to-goodness... You're an honest-to-goodness Catholic intellectual. You have a certain status, a certain ability, a certain series of gifts. What's your obligation to the rest of the world? What's your calling in life? What's your vocation?
Well, the easy vocation is, of course, as a teacher, I teach, but we're trying to recruit young people who will take over when we go on Social Security. And the biggest fear I have is that there are not enough young people in the pipeline who give a damn about religious truth. And secondly, who are even competent to discuss it one way or the other, because we have raised two generations of religion illiterate, above all in the Catholic school system. So it's a real problem, and I've always been trying to get a group together, whether in Connecticut, New York, or New Jersey, which would have two themes. Number one would be a religious center, but number two would be social life. The good boys and girls today, all they can meet are losers. There are so many losers in the world, creeps. And I'd love to have some intelligent, they knew. What we need is a place where once a week or once every 2 weeks we can get people together under the auspice. The sense would be we're not here simply to dance and have a lot of fun. We want to do this in the name of Christ, but neither are we going to be grim. and be Puritan and so on. So my biggest fear, I don't know if it's my obligation is to teach, but nobody's around listening. But my biggest fear is that we're not getting recruits. We're absolutely not getting the, beginning in grade school and then high school, all the damage is done in grade and high school. By the time they come to college, if they have any faith left, we'll kill it. But the real problem is the younger grades.
Teach, then would you say this, your actual vocation is to teach so it actually changes the behavior of people instead of simply that...
If I didn't mean to change people's mind, I'd be useless.
No,
a
I didn't say mind.
To change their
I
mind.
Said behavior.
What we can do is propose truth, and then behavior has to come from a free response of the will. I'd love to have people behave according to the Christian mode, but I mean, as a teacher, truth is my primary faith. I'm not trying to... I'd love them to win them over with the heart and with the will. But I would consider myself a tremendous success if I cleared up certain mental confusions.
If you clear up those mental confusions, will their behavior change automatically?
Not automatically.
Wow.
But there's because there's freedom of the will and there's the grace of God.
Okay. But then they would be clearly rejecting the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my lead-off question. Yeah. I mean, after all, people, that's why you're here, is to talk to them.
No, I want to ask Father Peter. Father Peter is a real thinker, ordained a year and a half ago, right, Father? Right. In the Gospel of today, Jesus referred to John the Baptist as, no man born of woman is greater than John the Baptist, but all of you people in the kingdom of heaven are still greater than John. Could you give us a little homily on that?
Oh, Father, would you give your name correctly for the record?
Yeah.
Since everybody gets it wrong. I'm serious, please.
Father Peter Towsley.
Towsley. Okay, very
from
good, please.
From Canada, by the way. A Canuck.
The reason why the Baptist was least in the kingdom was the greatest in one sense, at least, was because of baptism.
Pardon me?
Not baptized anybody now into the kingdom, no matter what stage he's at, he's baptized. But John the Baptist would have never been baptized. He had, you know, many of the early church fathers say that John the Baptist was sanctified after he was born.
Right.
From the consequences. The church has never made any dogmatic statement on that issue. But the fact being that because of baptismal grace being incorporated into the family of God, he's the greatest born in the Old Testament because he was the precursor. He spoke the word to the word. But because he was not baptized with baptismal grace, he now stands the least, in a sense, in the kingdom of God.
But whenever we say the Confiteor, we say, to Blessed Mary, ever virgin, to Blessed John the Baptist, he is ranked as
baptism
the number one saint.
Baptism by desire.
Okay.
See, but he did not have conferred grace.
The reason we mention this is that in a homily this morning, some priest said to the people in the audience, every one of you here is superior to John the Baptist. Would you accept that?
John the Baptist would have desired to have, well, the church has always said that he was sanctified after that point. In the kingdom of Christ at that point, anybody who would have been, or who was in the kingdom at that point, the only one that was Our Lady, per se, because she was conceived without original sin. Everybody else then, John the Baptist was the greatest because there was nobody else in the kingdom of heaven. In the sense of sanctifying grace and baptismal grace.
But is there, you don't think he was ever baptized, John the Baptist?
The church has never said that I've ever read. But we know that the first consequences of him when the apostles got jealous, they said, Jesus and his followers are over there baptizing. But we don't know. The church has never said, per se, that he was. Would he have been? You know, we don't have any of the early church, at least that I've ever read.
Couldn't he have received grace at the time
baptism.
Mary's visitation, because Mary wasn't baptized either.
Yeah, baptismal by desire.
It was God's gift to yes. Mary, and it could have been God's gift to St. John.
Okay, the only thing is that John the Baptist was sanctified after the fact.
Yeah.
Okay. Mary was conceived without sin.
But that was a gift of God.
Yes, I'm not denying that fact. What I'm saying is we don't know. So to rest on something solid, you want to be able to rest. And I'm not denying the fact that if we know that John the Baptist knew that he was baptizing, he knew that Jesus was the Messiah. Would he have had baptism? I would have to say from tradition, we don't know. Would he have per se because he knew? Because he was also given the gift of all of the gifts that are needed after that he was conceived?
Did he need baptism? Question.
Yes, you always need baptism. Because you don't want to, you want to say that
Mary,
he needs.
Mary didn't need baptism.
No, she didn't need it. Well, per se, we do not need baptism, because baptism, I'm assuming what you mean by baptism, the Trinitarian formula, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, baptism of desire, baptism of blood. So per se, he already had baptism of blood, he certainly had baptism by desire, he's in pearls.
Did you preach on this today?
No.
No.
Why not?
Because I preached on Advent saints.
Right.
Yeah. Father, it was the people down there that said that all of these people are greater than all the prophets and greater than John the Baptist. But wouldn't that be that made people greater? I mean, how sitting there...
Yeah. The only thing I would say in response to, I mean, it's a fuzzy kind of situation. In one sense, he is right. In one sense, he is, because we were given baptism by simply God's grace. John desired, we don't know whether John got the Trinitarian formula. We don't know that. I don't know that, put it that way. There may be something in tradition that says that he did. I've never read it.
But Jesus already knew something when he said that the least in the kingdom of heaven is higher than John. So
John,
Jesus therefore knew, said
because,
something.
Because right at that point, Our Lady and sanctifying grace were already hers. Now, the other thing is, John had not died at that point. So you would think that consequently he would live the rest of his life in the graces that he had been given. But like Thomas a Kempis, you know, we don't know what the rest of his life could have spelled out.
We were taught in Catholic school that John was relieved of original sin at the time he left in his mother's
womb. Yes.
But the statement this morning really shocked me.
Yeah, and justifiably so, because the church is called John the Baptist greatest saint. He even supersedes Saint Joseph.
Yeah.
But I think there would be some clarification.
But doesn't Christ mean the least in the sense of a servant, as he talks about service?
Well,
humility and service.
I read,
not necessarily grace.
Okay, I read Saint Hilary's homily on today's Gospel, and I also read the God, St. John Chrysostom on his Gospel today. And not to say that that's not a truth, but neither of them brought that into effect. So I again, not any of those fathers on this particular Gospel made mention to that particular point. I think that you may have a point, but they did not draw the
point.
This doesn't make total sense, but I was thinking maybe the Lord was referring to John the Baptist as being the last prophet, then he is not put to be in the church if he was.
No.
If he wasn't,
then
he
was. In the context, it has to be at least in the context by baptismal grace. By baptism. That's why he is
comparing it to the Old Testament.
Because of baptism, and we are conferred, and this is why, you know, Protestant theology...
This is interesting. One distinguishes in the Bible between the baptism of John and the baptism of Jesus. So the very baptism whereby John baptized Jesus is not that... sacramental?
No. No, because it was only to do what the... Or, yeah, it can't be sacramental. Christ is the... this is a bad term, but this honors Jesus is the sacrament.
Yeah. Let me say, John baptized many people prior to Jesus.
Yes.
And what was that involved in, the baptism of John?
Remember, he says in the Gospel, it did not take away sins.
Yeah.
The only one that can take away sins, it conferred nothing but an interior disposition. It conferred no grace. It, in one sense, it would be like a sacrament. I don't even want to say sacramental, but in that sense that it brought particular kinds of grace that, you know, I've never read anything so
bad. And when was that superseded now? When Jesus was baptized, when did we have the real sacramental baptism of Jesus? At what moment?
Probably the sign, when he was pierced.
When he died.
Water, symbolizing baptism, and wine, the Eucharist. Brought into the family of God and nourished the family of God.
That was the first real baptism?
No. That is the sacrament. That is the sacrament which gave us the Christ's passion, gave us the sacrament. Of which the first is the Eucharist. And all others transcend from
the Eucharist. We have the blood of Christ.
Yes. Well, no. When you mingle
the water, which is baptism,
that is both ablutional, so taking away of sin, and also what called to mind again the water and wine from the water and the blood from His Son. But that is where the church. St. Augustine said it was conceived and given birth at the cross, and it was conceived. I just can't remember. It was given birth. Conceived in the womb and given birth at the cross.
What was the it? What was it?
Sorry, she, the church.
The church.
The church.
Father, what was the Advent saint you were talking about?
St. Nicholas and St. John the Baptist.
Which Nicholas?
St. Nicholas I. St. Nicholas the First, the bishop.
The bishop. And what, is he an Advent saint?
St. Nicholas.
Yeah, but why do you specifically link him to Advent?
Well, in the sense that he led people to Christ. He gave up, gave to, in that sense. You know, he gave his life as a martyr. I tried to tie it in the context of kids. What I basically was telling the kids, there is no Santa Claus. They didn't know that.
This is the Greek of St. Nicholas of Bari?
No, of Mimer.
Where is he buried? In Italy or in Italy?
His remains, I believe, are in Italy.
Bari,
yes.
Yes.
But he's the most famous of all saints in the world. He is...
Because of Santa Claus?
No, because of St. Nicholas. He is more paintings of St. Nicholas than any other painting icon in the world other than Our Lady. None. St. Nicholas is patron of children, he's patron of Russia, and he's patron of Greece.
I didn't know that.
right, let me throw a tough question to you based on what you said before. You individually and say people in your status have the vocation of being a teacher. Teacher rightly means present the truth to people. If it doesn't change their behavior, and of course, then in danger of damnation. If before they were simply ignorant, and since you yourself admit you're very worried because there seems to be not too many people listening and being recruited, aren't you actually perhaps being more instrumental in people going to hell than actually becoming good Christians?
Let me answer that.
Okay, good.
Carl ran into the same difficulty because he prophesied that if the anonymous Christian, that whole...
that man of goodwill...
admit, and if we, by that fact, then take the gospel message, are we not inflicting them now with the gospel message? Now they have, so leave them in their ignorance. Truth is never, never, ever a detriment to personality. Holy Father talks about that if Christ in Galatians 5 says, in the fullness of time God sent forth his Son, born of a woman. In the fullness of time, it's in Christ's humanity that we find our completion of who we are. So you can never, a revelation of truth can never decrease who we are as human persons.
Okay, Father, but that's...
So to fully make us human, by that very fact, you need to know who Jesus Christ is. So you are then stunted. Now, okay, your question comes back. Leave them stunted.
Exactly.
Cannot.
Why?
Go therefore, teach, baptize all nations in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Agentes. Matthew 25 says, go therefore and preach.
Then he's saying, to whom much is given, much is asked, and if you have the average uninstructed, illiterate person, he has far less responsibility
than
after he hears me.
But if he knows the truth at that point, he's going to, with God's grace, will respond to the truth.
Suppose he doesn't.
But you can never deny going forth and preaching the truth.
No, in other words, that's his problem.
That, I mean, you can never deny the gospel truth.
Father, would you say, put it in a philosophical term, that's a categorical imperative?
Yeah.
What is it?
The obligation. Categorical imperative, meaning something that you have to do without qualification, without any, absolutely, regardless of the circumstances.
Because at the beginning of Matthew's gospel, sorry, it's philosophical. I am a philosopher, but I love theology too. But the beginning of the ministry of Christ and the end of the ministry of Christ was baptismal. And so go, therefore, teach all nations, baptizing them. That's a divine command. As the Father has sent me, so now I send you, John 20, to go forth. Preach the gospel to all nations. Mission of the Redeemer covers that, you know, the Holy Father's encyclical to the mission of the Redeemer. It's only in Christ that the fullness of ignorance can be clarified.
Would you not say then, therefore, that Bill, as an example, should not be counting numbers on the people he's reached? He should simply be preaching and teaching.
Because
not a numbers game.
Well, no. I can count. I have five fingers, but they're not.
But we can never. Christ gives the Eucharist. John 6 says, "Does this scandalize you? Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink His blood, you shall have no life in you." He said. So to clarify, we know there was at least 72. And so what did he say? Well, boys, let me re-qualify. Let's not say that it's really mystically, let's forget about it. Well, you know, let me talk to you about it. Maybe I can clarify a little. Does this scandalize you too? Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Who else do we go to? Who else? So in that sense, don't ever, ever worry about numbers. better to have 5 zealous than 50 lukewarm. Never to worry about numbers. Never. That's an American problem. We get worried about numbers. How many have you got going? Don't worry about it. Don't worry. How many Catholics are there in this country? Don't worry about it. The Lord is the Lord of harvest. You be faithful. You grow in sanctity and holiness. People don't have problems being around Mother Teresa, being holy. When you're in holiness presence, you don't have a problem being good. We be good, and people will come. Remember, they didn't say, see how much the gospel truth convicts us in our own consciousness. What were the early church Christians? See how much they love one another. That's the gospel convincer. That these people were willing to lay down their lives for the truth. Preaching.
I'd like to address the question to Bill. I think he's more suitable than Father here because he can put the Father on the spot. What does it take, or what do we need to do to wake up the bishop?
You grow in holiness. You grow in holiness.
I agree.
Now, if the Lord, and that's the answer. It's the only answer. When you're in, wake up. You wake up. We need to purify our own intentions. If the Lord gives you an opportunity to speak to the bishop at whatever point, he'll put, but unless we're responding to gospel values and growing in perfect hope, and that means that you've got to be at Fordham University. I remember Father Lawler went to the Catholic Theological Society, or not the other one.
The American Council of Heretics.
Fellowship of Catholic Scholars.
Fellowship of Catholic Scholars. And he said, and he was the main address, he gave the main address and said to the people there, to the priests that are all got doctorates and bishops, he said, and Bill May was a little antsy about this one, but he said, it's for our benefit that the church is in this situation. Use the circumstances that we're in to grow in holiness. Use the situation in which you're in to grow in holiness.
But is the bishop supposed to make us holy?
No.
You make yourself holy.
But what happened in the early parts of the church? The early parts of the church, we had 3/4 of the bishops running in every kind of heresy under the sun. And what did that deny us? Well, I don't have to be holy because the bishops aren't holy. They're wacko. That's right. So now, how do we challenge it? I mean, we got to do things if God is calling us to do that. But where do I grow in holiness? Whatever God gives you as... It means doing little things with great love. That's the answer.
Father, what about the issue of abortion, which is very central to most of our lives?
So?
The tragedy of it is that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing, but the babies are still dying.
But who's in charge? You or God? I am not denying, I love the issue, because I love the issue. But you're bringing grace by the very fact of what you're doing. That's all you can do. What else are you going to do? I mean, we can take all the bishops and line them up and shoot them all.
Yeah, but if they're
then there'll be 3,500 different places.
Okay, they stood up for what the church is
okay, but that's it. But that's past. What can we do about that? And I'm not denying that fact. I don't deny that we've got some weaknesses within the context of the bishops. I don't deny that. But what do we do now? We've got the ball. And what is the response that the church has always done? Raised up saints. Raised up saints. That's the answer. We've got to grow in holiness, using as many graces of which we can. If that means that you've got to go down to an abortion clinic, and tie yourself to a door, if that's what God is calling, then what does that mean? Then you need a spiritual director. Because St. Teresa of Avila says, close that tape, it's a task that tries to lead himself to water.
What did St. Teresa say?
It's an ass that tries to lead himself. You need a spiritual director. Spiritual director without getting direction. So, and that's why, you know, I know that there's some problems, and I'm not denying any of them. I mean, I live within the context of having to be a Christian. But the answer is, what do we do? Use the circumstances of our lives in which to help us to grow in holiness. And answer it, educate ourselves, and know the truths. What did the church teach? What does the church teach? And grow in the sense where you're planted.
Let me develop that and ask you a question, and then you try to answer it, and then you comment on it if you would, Father, if I could actually stop you. Okay. Now, the point is this. This gentleman says, why don't we wake up the bishops? The bishop is good. If he's really, really good, you won't notice him because that's expected. But if a layperson is really holy, you might notice it more. What I'm asking is this. You're in an institution, you Bill, which allegedly is Catholic. If you behave as a real Catholic there, if you teach real Catholic doctrines, if you challenge your students to become real honest with them as Christians, people could say, not in any denigrating fashion, he's only doing his job. Everybody else is failing, but he's only doing what he's supposed to do. If you were in the University of Iowa or New York University presenting real Catholic positions, as someone we both know, I think Tom Drolescu does, okay, would that not be more of a light in the darkness? And I'm not saying you should quit or anything. I'm purely hypothetical. Would a Catholic, a real honest-to-goodness Catholic teacher be more, considering the state of Catholic education, more effective, more of a beacon, more of a saint-like person in a secular institution than in a Catholic one? Comment, please.
First of all, the fact is that your average Catholic college, the undergraduates are in the exact same spot as if they were in NYU or
that's
Iowa
right.
or whatever.
Yeah.
It
doesn't make any difference.
They have not a clue. They do not know how to say a single prayer. So therefore, I am with the Gentiles. I am with the thing. And secondly, as a philosopher, I stick to things susceptible to reason. I am a practicing Catholic, and if there's ever an allusion or a reference to faith which I can relevant, I bring it in. But I am dealing with things about reason, whether it's God or man or truth or whatever. There's an enormous crisis of the very possibility of truth. I had been up to down to Fordham a couple of months ago, and the alleged topic was a debate on the truth of religion. So there was this nice Baptist minister, a black man, and he never got to arguing whether the Baptist version of Christianity is true or the Catholic version. He didn't believe in truth. He got up there and said, well, I hold X, Y, Z, Vinny, you hold the exact opposite, we're both right. And Vinny spent all his time trying, this is the way everyone says it, this is the disease of the mind, it has nothing to do with loss of faith, the disease of the mind. If something seems so to you, it is so for you, whether it's ethics, aesthetics, beauty included, above all beauty, religion, or anything. So it's hope. It's hopeless to have a dialogue. So I spend most of my time talking about truth as such to the student.
Sure, but still, just for the outside, you see, again, you have a name, you have a reputation, you're not simply Joe college teacher. You're beyond that. If you were in a secular institution, would your reputation be more? Because people would say, and you know what? He teaches at NYU, not at Fordham. A lot of people are ignorant of the state of Fordham and the other
Catholic. Oh, I know. They think it's Catholic.
That's right.
They think Jesuits are Catholic.
Right, right. What I'm trying to say is, on a purely hypothetical level, do you think your light would shine more brightly in a place where it's expected
to be? Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, especially if I went to a prestigious secular university, Yale and Harvard and all that have prestige, but philosophically they are church important.
I know
what's important. But the thing is, academic freedom is a pure fraud. My dear friend Alice von Hildebrand was a professor at City College of Hunter for 37 years. professor of philosophy, and that place was filled with Marxists and atheists for the most part. And she held her own. She's a sprightly little woman from Belgium. So one day, the head of the department is a Catholic, a coward. And so Alice is teaching the course in metaphysics, which has to do with the ultimate explanation of things. And some student asked her about God's existence, so she answered him. But the chairman summoned her and said, "What's this you're doing in your metaphysics class? I heard you mention God." And she said, "Well, the student asked me a question," and he said, "The next time anyone mentions God in metaphysics class, you give them St. Anselm's proof for God's existence and then refute it." This is the academic freedom. It's the biggest farce of the world. You are free to push Satan, to push Marx, to push Freud, or anyone else. God forbid you even push truth. So that's the biggest joke in the world, academic freedom. The only time they want a Catholic on their faculty is a bad Catholic. So the joke is, the only good Catholic is a bad Catholic.
Yep.
And then they'll accept you in. But they don't want to hear that. So the state university. Now, the private university like Princeton, once in a while they get a guy like Mary Town, who was a very bad communicator. He was a serious man. And even he backed off. So I, my best friend now is a man named John Rayon. He and I are going to run this thing going to Europe, to Italy next summer. Rayon has a PhD from Oxford, and he and I have agreed that the universities are dead. He's a professor of history at St. John's on the quarter. We think the funniest word in English language is professor. Whenever we want to crack up, we say professor. We think higher education is doomed. And we think the education of the future will be serious grade school and high school, and then reading great books. We'd like to do the great books. But the average university moronizes, except for technical subjects. They're excellent on chemistry, physics, and mathematics. But when it comes to the humanities, they will moronize you. Shakespeare will end up like a blithering idiot. Even Shakespeare suffers now from these people. So I have no hope. I have four children. Every one of them could have had the PhD at 24. My daughter could have had it at 21. She had 1 year to go. Every one of them dropped out of graduate school and wants to do nothing to university. Loretta's in prison right now protesting abortion. Some of my boys are engineering, working on computers, and others are cutting down trees. And I say, "Well, why don't you guys get into university?" They say, "They want nothing to do with the academic world." I guess I've downgraded it so much that I'm to blame. But then I go around looking for recruits. I think I keep saying, "Oh, come on, it's not that bad. Come on in." But they're not. So I have no recruits.
So, Bill, what you're saying is the frustration of the people out there like yourself must be absolutely, I mean, I don't know how you're not...
Well, I survive because the hours are perfect. I mean, you can survive anything. I go to Fordham only 10, I mean, I have to teach only 9 hours a week for 32 weeks. Now, you can stand even a death.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you couldn't take this 5 days a week, 40 hours a week.
And you always meet some great students. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there's one out of whatever.
We have two or three good colleagues, but the institution is a disaster.
But, I mean, as you say, this young man said, you know, you want to help the young people. But when it's this frustrating, it's like a needle in the haystack.
Well, we're forgetting what Father said. I mean, I think we have to realize that not everybody is in an intellectual institution, and not everybody is a businessman. I think we have to understand what Father is saying. We are in a society that is sick. I mean, there isn't any part of this society that we can look up to except good Catholic friends. And I think what Father said is true. I mean, we can get so frustrated and give up, and we can get annoyed at this bishop or that priest, and we'll spend the rest of our lives in an activism of frustration and aggravation, and we're missing the whole point, because how do we know that God isn't saying to us, He's permitting all this because He's looking for our sanctity. He's looking for our holiness to develop in this world, and it's our individual holiness, part individual of sanctifying the ordinary things of everyday life. I, as a mother, as a nurse, as a housewife, as a friend, as a companion, as a Catholic, whatever I do for the glory of God, and how I live my life, we are going to change the world one-on-one. And how we live our Catholic faith. If we spend our life in activism and getting angry, can you imagine all the graces we could lose? Instead of sanctifying what we have in prayer. And the hardest thing to do is to look at ourselves and see ourselves and how we can grow holier. Do you agree with me, Father? I mean, it's very hard to grow in holiness. That's why St. Teresa says you need someone to lead you. Now, and we have to do it one-on-one as lights. Like Bush said, he wanted lights. We can be the lights for God.
Well, one other thing is this, that
in every area,
we all have families, whether nephews, nieces, and so on. I would at least try and start by myself. Of my four children, one of them is out of the church, and he's a wild philosopher, to say the least. He's into Nietzsche and Heidegger right now. He's a good kid, but he's lost his faith, and he's quite bitter about the world. And so I can't even have that much influence on my own son. He was my favorite kid. I mean, I really nursed him from but I took care of him. Secondly, we all have grandchildren and all that, so we ought, before we look at the total macrocosm, there is a microcosm. We ought to teach catechism to the grandchildren and get rid of the stupid influences. I think the greatest enemy to learning today are schools. Would 1% of the schools actually help youngsters? 99% they destroy your faith, your reason, your morals, your sense of aesthetics, everything else. So I always like to try and take young people and try to teach them something. Teach them catechism and then show them some, read C.S. Lewis stories to them, things like that. So, but I mean, I am not personally frustrated. I do not worry about, it's kind of depressing to see my colleagues. That's the most depressing thing of all, the colleagues. Because we have 90 faculty on my campus, and about 5 would in any way say, even understand me, that's my sympathize. Other people think what is
you're
this
right
article? And this is a light, and the Jesuits are worse than the light. Jesuits are much worse. On my campus, uptown, they're better. So, but sometimes we are trying to fight the problem of the universal church, and meanwhile our own kid, our own nephew, our own grandchild is going to hell. We have all kinds of nonsense teaching about sexual ethics and so on. We ought to get serious now.
Father, just a hypothetical again. If a person has an opportunity, and God, I agree, God puts us where he wants us, but if a person could be the good Catholic, whatever he is, the auto mechanic, the teacher, the anything, would he have more effect being in a secular, non-Catholic group or among other Catholics? Just hypothetical. Just interested in your opinion.
The point is doing God's will. And wherever that is where we do the best we can. That's to knowledge.
I really think that that's a serious question, because if you're a teacher, of course, it depends on the situation that you put in. If you're teaching religion, it's one thing. If you're teaching mathematics, nothing. But if I'm a mechanic, if I'm a cook, if I'm this or that, to the extent that I have an interior unity to my life based on Christ, it doesn't make any difference who's around me. I think the impact is going to be important. Whether you're surrounded by non-Catholics or Catholics, because God help us, the Catholics need edification as much as anyone else.
Academic freedom has any value whatsoever.
No, I mean, it's a joke.
Not that it's a joke. I agree it's a joke.
Yeah.
But if it could actually be achieved, would it be a desirable thing?
There are two different things. When you say academic freedom, the normal scenario is you have this professor who has so much truth, he goes into a place and he teaches, and the people fire him because the people don't like what he's saying. Now, the doctrine of academic freedom in one sense means an institution will hire a professor and check out his qualification, and then they'll say the professor is free to lecture and write And whatever direction his sense of truth takes him, even if he's objectively wrong. So that's the sense of academic freedom. Now, the distinction to this, if you have a yeshiva, if you have a Jewish school, and the entire reason the school exists is to form young people into understanding the world the way the Orthodox Jews understand the world, well, then it would be, someone might come in there and get hired and start preaching.